I'm Jake Mintz.
And I'm Jordan Schusterman. And on this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbacast, we are previewing opening day by drafting all 30 opening day starters, keeping track of which one of our teams has the lowest ERA. We're also talking about the latest from Shohei Ohtani. He spoke to the media. What can we learn from that? What did we not learn from that? And Jordan Montgomery finally has a baseball team. All that and our awards picks on this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world with a Jordan from Montgomery County. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. Good morning, my friend.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, man. Good morning. It is Wednesday. The baseball season officially begins tomorrow. And Jordan Montgomery, God bless him, has a baseball team. We are going to be talking about his new baseball team, the team that he just defeated in the World Series? ?
If you beat them, join them.
Yeah, it's a reverse NBA Street logic is what is happening there. We are going to talk about Jordan Montgomery. We are going to update the latest as we have officially heard from Mr. Ohtani in, I guess, was a press conference. We did bring the press together and he said words to them, whether that was a press conference or not. Yeah,
I think it was a press convene.
Yeah, press convening, maybe less of a back and forth. And then I am so excited. I mean, opening day is tomorrow, so I'm excited anyway. But we are bringing back something we did last year, the opening day starter draft. In 2022, we did the opening day starter tier list. We did that on a live stream. Last year, we did an opening day starter draft. So we are going to draft all 30 opening day starters and tally how our starters do. Team with the lowest ERA at the end of Thursday will win. What we will win, who knows? But it's a made up podcast competition, and everybody loves a draft on a podcast. So that's going to be a damn good time. I'm looking forward to that.
And it's not who's got the best, you know, ex-WOBA against or, you know, who's missing the most bats or getting the most
or even
ride
FIP,
on their fastball.
Right? It's not. It's no FIP. Sorry, this is just straight ERA, baby.
This is a results based business.
Exactly, especially on opening day when everybody is watching. And then at the end of the show, I know earlier this week we gave our division picks, which we really believe in so much. At the end of the show, we will be giving our awards picks, which we are similarly confident in. But Jake, opening day is tomorrow. I'm so excited. We are, I guess, a little over 24 hours away from the first pitch of the season, which will be thrown by Jose Quintana. So get amped. The Mets Brewers, the whole country will be watching Mets Brewers for a couple hours before the rest of the season starts.
Which is great. Whenever we have this, the first pitch of the season thrown by not an ace, mm-hmm. I think that's just the kindest way to put it. I am ripped back to, I believe, 2018.
Yep.
Or I think it was 2018. Marlins-Cubs was the first game earlier than all the other games. And these were just brutal Marlins teams, right? Just tough to watch. And Jose Urania, who was essentially – he was on the Marlins to just throw at Ronald Acuna at this point. Like, that was his entire existence. He started against the Cubs. And I believe Ian Happ homered. As the first batter of the game, and it was like, all right, let's get this thing underway, baby.
First pitch of the season, Ian Happ just parks it beyond the outfield fence at what was then still Marlins Park. Jose Urania, who, if I saw correctly, just made the Rangers. So
watch out, Ronald.
I don't really know what to make of that. But anyway, okay, sorry. We're gonna get to our opening start, but I'm so excited.
And you're gonna be in. We'll both be at games.
Yes. I will be in Cincinnati at Reds Nationals opening day. Of course, a very big deal in Cincinnati. While it is not officially in the rule book of Major League Baseball, because it is just, again, it's, of course, the oldest franchise, and it's just something that has become such a tradition in the city, I believe the Reds have opened at home, like officially, not just like real opening day has been in Cincinnati, basically every year for the last 120 years, except for like three times. So that's a pretty cool thing. They do a whole parade and everything. So I'm looking forward to being downtown around that and and seeing the Reds. It's going to be a very different vibe than it was a year ago, even with all the injuries. And you will be probably in Philadelphia. Is that correct?
I will be in Philadelphia. Phillies Braves. I would say easily the most interesting opening day matchup. Spencer Strider, Zach Wheeler. It's like that, you know, it's the way to think about it. This series for them, it's games 5, 6, and 7 of the 2023 NLDS.
Yeah. Never stop. Yeah. No, it's all the same, all the same. Spencer Turnbull, I guess he's going to have to get kind of initiated as to what to expect.
Even if, like, if Jared Kelenic, I assume he'll start against Wheeler.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But he will not start against Ranger Suarez on Sunday. That means it will be Duvall. And so what changes? I am just excited to be back in the mix, man. Like, it's the best. Opening day is the best feeling, and I can't wait.
And by the way,
it's not the best. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, by the way, like, I love this day too. The last day without baseball, and we got some college baseball, whatever. But like, this is just such a great, like, take a deep breath, and like, now it's go time. So enjoy the peace and quiet today. But tomorrow it all begins.
I'm gonna cook an elaborate meal today my last. I'm free at 6:38. You know.
Yeah, for the last time. Okay, Jake, before we get to our other opening day festivities and picks and everything, let us check in on Mr. Ohtani once again. We finally heard from him. He sat in front of many microphones and many cameras and many reporters.
No, not many cameras.
Enough cameras. I mean, quick comment on that. I know there was a said, okay, you're not allowed to have cameras in the room. I don't know what that really meant. It's not like there weren't 100 shots of him. But the thing that really stood out to me about the no cameras rule is there's one shot, because guess who was taking pictures? Every reporter that was in the room, right? So, or at least before Ohtani sat down.
Yeah.
There was one shot where you can see the Dodgers official team photographer, John Soo Hoo, who's of course a legend, right? Like getting ready. And I was thinking, I was like, this is an interesting event to want to get officially photographed. Like, even in the world where Ohtani is 100% innocent and he's completely cleared and nothing is wrong and he goes on to have this amazing Dodgers career, it is funny to like document this as from the official Dodgers perspective. Like that amused me in some way.
Right. Whenever I see like official team photographers taking photos, it's like, oh, well, if that's good, it'll go up in the hallway of the stadium. Like, right, they're not blowing up a large picture of Ohtani and Will Ireton to like highlight for fans when they walk into the suite.
I know it's probably, again, he's doing his job. Of course, I'm not. But it's just, there was something about that where I was like, to your point, right? Like, this isn't getting, you know, made into this glossy picture we're putting in the spring training complex.
But let's be clear. This is a press conference we will remember as baseball fans for the rest of our lives.
Yes.
Because it was so bizarre, so singular, so unique. And Jordan, did Ohtani eat?
wow, that's an interesting lead into to this conversation.
Did Show eat?
Depends how you define eat in whatever generational terms you want to use. When we spoke on Monday, speculating about what it would be like, I know one of the poll quotes that in the social clips was me saying, like, I'm expecting a whole lot of nothing. And while I don't think that ended up being true, because I think he said a lot more than we expected, we didn't necessarily get a lot of new information. But what happened and what is most important... Yeah.
There was no new news.
It would not qualify for new news. Although I guess it depends how closely the Kelsey's are paying attention. Possibly that was new news, if that was the first they heard of it. But anyway, what was significant was that these were very clear... accusations. These were very clear telling of the story. This was not a straight denial and saying what Ipe said I did not happen. This was his telling of his experience and what he believed happened. And the line, which you mentioned, the line that we will remember forever, which is, he stole from my accounts and he told lies. That is the line that will stick with us for a long time, where we will find out how perfectly accurate that is. But that is what clearly Ohtani and the people who helped prepare his statement wanted to make very clear is that Ipe stole from him. He has been betrayed, and that is what has happened.
And he told lies.
I would say he told, I think the lies, I mean, he told so many lies. I actually might have led with the lies before the stealing from his accounts, because I think how we got into all of this mess.
Okay. I don't think he told 4.5 million lies, but go ahead.
You say that. I mean, the amount of lying that he managed to get in before apparently Ohtani had any idea what was going on is staggering. And that is the version of the events that is still kind of hard for me to wrap my mind around, is the fact that as this investigation made its way to the Ohtani circle, it was all funneled through Ipe before Ohtani, as according to Ohtani, before Ohtani had any idea about it when he finds out about it in the team meeting, according to his, you know, telling of events. That is still an incredible, I'm not saying this in a way that like I don't believe him. I'm just saying in a way of like, that is a remarkable way for all of this to go down.
Oh, absolutely. I do think you're right that this press conference drew very clear battle lines. Ipe is out. Like, Ipe is on his own, on an island. Oh, he's no longer part of Ohtani land. He is now the enemy, the combatant. Like, he is fair game, right?
And to that point, now it is going to be, will Ipe fight back and try and either bring back a story that he originally told, or is he going to basically eat it, or not eat, but you know, basically admit and say, in the way that Ohtani says that Ipe did tell him and admit it to him at the team hotel after the team meeting, will Ipe be like, yep, this is what happened, I stole from his account, and then we go from there?
Because if Ipe admits it, I would imagine, legally speaking, that simplifies a lot. Now, whether or not that convinces all the reply guys on Twitter is a different thing, and in some ways more and less important. But like, if Ipe says, I did it, he admit it, like, then we're good, right? We're clear, like, Ipe guilty, Ohtani innocent, MLB will do an investigation, they won't find him guilty, and like, maybe I'm oversimplifying this, but if Ipe decides to, you know, buckle up, fight back, he not admit it, then it's going to be fascinating.
And then it's going to get messy. But that being said,
if it does get messy, give me Ohtani. I'll take Ohtani minus the points here because my guy Ipe did not have a lawyer this time last week.
And that's the thing. I think that the more we hear about this, while I think it is still concerning, everything I just said, the degree to which Ohtani's camp was willing to put Ipe in front of ESPN and handle all of that, or try and handle all of that and almost squash it before it got to Ohtani, that was clearly not the way to handle it. Yeah. The change stories still seems to be right now at the basis of Ipe, who was panicking and deciding to tell all these different stories. Now, again, there are still more questions to be asked. How did he actually accomplish this theft? Why was the bookmaker even letting him take out? Why was he allowing this guy to get into this amount of debt? There are still questions here. But this is the story, as you know, has been pointed out. Like, it is very clear. This is the side he is taking. He's accused him of theft, and we will go from there.
Three more things on this, and then we will move on. Number one, good time to find your nearest lawyer who you trust and ask about this, because usually lawyers not that useful when it comes to, you know, discussing ball. There are lawyers who know ball, but if you want lawyers who know law, now is the time, because Ohtani, by making accusations towards Ipe in this press conference, kind of puts himself at risk here. Because if Ohtani is not telling the truth, and that could be proved, then Ipe could just countersue for defamation, right? And the sense from baseball internet lawyers like Greg Calcaterra and hilariously Pitching Ninja, right, is that Ohtani could have just denied his own culpability. Instead, he went on the attack. And that's not something he would do unless he really believed he was correct.
Yeah. Shouts out to Defamation Ninja for clarifying some of the details here.
I need the spinoff. I need the spinoff. Defamation Ninja. It's gifts of lawyers Just like walking into courtrooms.
No. What it should be is it should be like slow-mo of Ohtani's presser where, you know, Rob is like breaking down, like, here's where, like, when Ohtani like looks at himself, here's where he accuses Ipe of theft.
Dude, defamation ninja.
Ohtani is so funny. Accusing interpreter of theft, comma. fire emoji.
Next thing. Ohtani had the opportunity to do the funniest thing in the history of the world. Okay. And this is what Ohtani should have done. Ready? Thank you all for being here today. It is true that my former interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara, used an illegal bookie to bet on sports. And that's why whenever I gamble, I make sure to use FanDuel Sportsbook.
How much would he have had to be legally paid to turn that into an ad for a legal sports book?
Dude, that's the thing. That's why this is also wonky, is like he should not have done that.
That's the problem, especially in the state of California.
Correct. So, in a different state where betting was legal, I'm pretty sure Ohtani could have just done that. Like, he could have, there are players who have done, like, you know, not anonymous. Like, I think Charlie Blackman did like a gambling spokesman website ad, and like, it can be done, and players don't do it because it's messy for a reason. But that's why this is also,
fajaste. Yeah. Did you have one more point? I mean, again, to me, like...
Well, the Dave Roberts stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So then yesterday, Dave Roberts. Now, clearly, it's becoming pretty clear that we're not going to get, at least in the early going, we're not going to get a lot of insight from players on this, at least publicly. But Dave Roberts, as we learned always, back to in the days before they signed Ohtani, like, Dave Roberts will tell you what he's thinking. Okay? Which, you know, God bless him. And Dave Roberts... when asked about, like, okay, like, so Ipe's not here anymore, like, how does this impact, you know, the relationship between player and team? Like, because that's, you have an interpreter for a reason, like, that's why. And now, obviously, Will Ireton, who I'm going to bring up here in a second, is important. But anyway, Dave Roberts said this on Tuesday. Actually, I would argue it's going to help relations internally because there's no longer a buffer. I think that I've already seen it in the last couple of days. I think Shohei has been even more engaging with his teammates, and I think there's only upside with that. Now, this might be, it's possible that Dave Roberts genuinely believes this, right?
And it's also possible that it's true.
It's also possible that it ends up being correct, you know? However, the notion that the way to spin this from a week ago, who would have been like, we got to get the Ipe guy out of the way, you know? Because he's restricting us from connecting with Ohtani. So whereas now, like, 2 days after he gets fired, it's like, oh, thank goodness he's gone, regardless of all of the horrible, you know, interpersonal betrayal, now we can actually get to know Shohei. Like, that is a pretty incredible form of revisionist history, which, again, maybe ends up being accurate, which is, I guess, maybe a fascinating subplot to, I guess, now watch for the remainder of Ohtani's, you know, literal career, let alone just, you know, beat with the Dodgers this season. But it is just a pretty fascinating way to spin this. And I am curious if it actually in any way ends up being true moving forward.
Dave Roberts, thank God this happened.
Just what we needed.
Just what the Dodgers needed. All right. Enough Ohtani chat. Moving forward, there will be more news that trickles out. We'll cover it as necessary. From one guy who can't even pitch to one who actually will, Jordan Montgomery, postseason hero, winning the World Series with the Texas Rangers, hitting free agency at a very convenient time for him. Felt like one hell of a walk year. But up until yesterday, he continued to be unemployed and some income. The Arizona Diamondbacks, essentially a deal for 2 years, $45 million. Jordan Montgomery in the desert.
Well, to tie this back to Ohtani ever so briefly, it is remarkable that we managed to see Shohei Ohtani throwing a baseball in uniform before we saw Jordan Montgomery throwing a baseball in uniform in the year 2024. Okay, because after his presser, we saw Ohtani throwing for the first time publicly, as he reminds everyone that he is also still a pitcher. Jordan Montgomery, meanwhile, the last free agent standing, the last Boris client to be left out in the cold, wondering, will I pitch in Major League Baseball this year? And just before opening day, he strikes a deal with the Snakes, as you mentioned, a two-year deal where he's guaranteed $25 million this season and likely at least $20 million in 2025 if he starts at least 10 games. That can go up to $25 million in 2025 if he starts 23 games this year, which with the delayed start to a season may or may not happen. But let's say best case scenario, 2 years, $50 million for Jordan Montgomery. I mean, the first take for everyone is, oh, well, how could all these other teams that need pitching more didn't beat that? It's not always that simple. I know we want to make it that simple. But to me, this is about Jordan Montgomery saying, hello, I would like to be on a team. Clearly, he had no interest in taking this into the season. And the Arizona Diamondbacks, who have already lost their closer, Paul Sewald, to the IL, and the other lefty, they gave a bunch of money, Eduardo Rodriguez, to an injury as well. And them saying, no, we're not going to let that be like, okay, screw it. We'll just, roll Tommy Henry out there and hope for the best. They're like, no. Like, we just won the National League, and we are taking this season very seriously. And if no one else wants to jump in and make this happen, we will happily give Jordan Montgomery, $25 million this season.
Yeah, it's a good deal. And we've reached a point now where this feels like more about Scott Boras biffing the offseason than the transaction itself, because all of his clients just undershot what we thought they'd get. And there's no two ways around it. There's no way these folks are happy or happy with how this played out. And Montgomery, it smells like Montgomery was like, you get me the best deal before opening day. Like, he's like, I'm signing before opening day.
Yeah.
I would imagine that's how this played out.
Yeah. That's absolutely what it looks like. Basically every single one of his top clients, besides Jung-Hoo Lee, who of course did extremely well. Although ultimately, if you just factor that into the total amount of money given by the Giants to Scott Boras clients, it kind of evens out to still end up being less than you probably expected when you consider what Chapman and Snell got. I'm glad he has a team. It is a good fit, and credit to the Snakes. And by the way, credit to them. We were kind of hating a little bit on our NL West preview, showing some skepticism about maybe not that they didn't do a lot this winter, although I will point out that I did say, like, I'm shocked they didn't do anything in the bullpen. And for them, not that that means I knew they were going to lose Paul Sewald to an injury, but it is a reminder of running it back. There are kind of dangers to that sometimes injury related, sometimes regression related. So now you could also say, well, they didn't have Paul Sewald for the beginning of last season either. And they still made it. Yeah. So I hear that. But I like this fit, and it makes a pretty solid rotation. Presumably Erod comes back, and then it's looking like a pretty solid group.
It is just a weird look that Erod got 476 and Montgomery got essentially 125.
Okay, but to that point, that's the last thing I was going to say about this. I was pretty consistent. I think I said this on the show before. I really do think that there's an alternate timeline where Erod goes to the Dodgers and pitches well, and Montgomery doesn't make the playoffs, and they get a very similar contract. Like, I don't view them that differently. Maybe I'm high on Erod and slightly low on Montgomery. I think the hype after the postseason for Montgomery was a little bit out of control, and I never thought he was going to get 7-200 or whatever, Boris was floating at the beginning of the winter. However, his durability and the fact that he has legitimately improved over the last few seasons, 250 is ridiculous. I mean, for a guy who's been this durable to not be able to get a long-term deal like this is just shocking and really disappointing for him. But I'm glad he has a team, and hopefully he'll be pitching soon.
All right, let's take a quick break. And when we return, we will flip things forward to the national holiday that should be opening day. We will draft all of the starting pitching matchups after this. And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Opening day. Absolute best. To be an opening day starter is both an honor and at times a ruse. Every team has to have an opening day starter.
Oh, that's a good point.
You have to have one. Okay, so. I guess you could bullpen day opening day.
Well, and I will say, you know, we are recording this on Wednesday morning, and, you know, knock on wood, all of these guys will make it to the first pitch of the season healthy. But we have had many examples in recent years of opening day starters waking up on opening day and being like, sorry, not going to happen. And with the number of pitching injuries we've had this spring, I would not put that past us. But as we sit here today, we have 30 starting pitchers who will take the mound on Thursday to begin the season, and we are going to draft all of them. Again, the game is simple. Lowest ERA at the end of the day with our combined 15 pitchers will win. Now, we could. There's a lot of different strategy to this. We did this last year. I believe I ended up squeaking out a victory last year, but I will have to go back and check that. But we will be tracking this, of course, on Thursday. We will review the results on Friday's episode. Now, before we start drafting, Jake, let's just look at the slate here for a second, okay?
Sure.
Because while there's no wrong way to schedule opening day, I am looking at the fact that half of the games start at 4:10 p.m. Eastern, and I'm a little bummed about that because that's the time my game starts in Cincinnati. And like in general, though, like I like it. I know we have like the last day of the season, 162, where everything starts at 3. That I like, and that's, I wish we had these a little bit more spaced out, right? We have 1:01 p.m., 2:03 p.m., 8:04 p.m. ESPN has like the exclusive window, so they've got Cubs Rangers at 7:30, and then we've got 3 late games. But it does feel a little bit more imbalanced than normal. But well, crazy.
I think it might have to do with keeping that window open.
Yeah.
Right. Because they don't want any of these 4 o'clock games bleeding into that 7:30 spot. Well, and they don't want anything.
Pitch clock got you covered, right, ESPN. Don't you worry.
Don't you worry. But yes, I agree. There should be like a 2 o'clock game.
Yeah, gotta be
more
some earlier
3 o'clock
ones.
Games. Yeah. Like, yeah. There's a better way to do this, but
yes,
we're still going to watch, duh, and we're still amped about it, duh.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to go through the matchups, or do you just want to start drafting?
Well, before we start drafting, I mean, let's highlight at least a couple, and then we can comment on some of them as we draft. I mean, you already mentioned, like, Braves-Phillies is probably the best matchup of the day, not just the best pitching matchup. And by the way, that will, of course, be interesting where we decide to draft Strider and Wheeler, because they're, of course, maybe the two best pitchers available, but maybe not necessarily the offenses you want to go against. But, I mean, what would you say is the second game you're most looking forward to watching on Thursday?
Well, so just to be clear, I believe there are only four series between playoff teams. So it's Phillies, Braves. Mm-hmm. It's Blue Jays, Rays. Mm-hmm. It's Astros, Yankees.
Oh, the Yankees? Did they make the playoffs last year?
Oh, I guess they didn't make the playoffs.
So then, I
misspoke. I misspoke. Yeah, it's literally just two. It's only two series. Mm-hmm. I'm wrong. It's literally two series between teams that made the playoffs. That's it.
Yeah.
It's Phillies, Braves, and bizarrely, again, it feels weird, Blue Jays, Rays. So those are the two most interesting ones, I guess. I would say, Yankees Astros is always good.
Yeah.
In my mind, it's just like permanently the ALCS. So that's why I said that.
Right. But yeah, I mean, some of these are better than others. But for the purposes of this game, we are just thinking about run prevention, baby. Which of these pitchers are going to make it through this opening day start unscathed? Now, you know, there's some strategy with this. How many of these pitchers are definitely going to, you know, throw 7 innings on opening day? You know, that depends. But I guess we will see. You know who's not?
Yeah. Tyler Glasnow.
Tyler Glasnow is probably not going 7 innings. Yeah, I would guess. Now, he is more built up in theory than a lot of these other guys, so maybe. But anyway, okay, let's get into it, Jake. I can't remember who picked first last year. I think you did, but I could be wrong.
You want to go first? You go first.
Okay, fine. All right, I will go first. And with the first pick, and again, we didn't do too much prep here, but again, we're gonna keep this very simple. With the first pick in the 2024 opening day starter draft, Team Jordan selects Tarek Skubal.
Yep, that is
Tarek Skubal, who's looked fantastic in spring training. Not only has he looked fantastic in spring training, but he is facing the White Sox of Chicago on opening day, and I will take him with my first pick.
Jordan, that is a smart pick, and I'm going to stay in the division, and I will take Pablo Lopez against the Kansas City Royals.
Yes, he was second on my board. Second on my board there.
The game?
Totally reasonable, yeah.
this game is just as much about who you pitch in against as how good are you.
And to that point, I will take Mr. Shane Bieber with my second pick against Oakland. And I'm just very high on Bieber this year, so I'm just going to go. I mean, listen, there's some great pitchers still available here, but I'm just want to make sure I'm getting the weaker opponents in the early going.
Smart man. Smart man. I'll go Corbin Burnes now against the Los Angeles Angels. I think this could have been the first pick. I think there are many people who would have taken this as the first pick. Mm-hmm. The Angels offense is also probably not that good. But like the thing is, there is a chance that Trout just homers three times.
He is on the team. So you're going to have to worry about that.
That is true. However, Camden Yards, fun to pitch in now.
Right. I hope Corbin Burnes is aware of that. Okay. You know what, though? I am not going to overthink it. And I'm going to take Spencer Strider because he's the best pitcher in the world. So right now, at least. So I'm going to take Spencer Strider and not overthink it too much. I'm not going to get too cheeky with my matchup picks.
That is smart. I am going to continue to get cheeky, and I'm going to take Jesus Luzardo at home against the Pirates.
Okay. I was looking at that matchup on both sides here. Do I want to go with, I think Lone Depot is going to be bumping. All right.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
So you're going with that side of it there, which I think is totally understandable. All righty, let's see here. Who do I want to go with next? Obviously, a lot of good pitchers still on the board. I think I'm going to go with Zach Gallen.
Yeah.
Zach Gallen here.
That was
again, my pick. Not pitching in Coors Field. He is facing the Rockies, but I am going to go with Gallen here with my fourth selection.
Yeah, good call there. I am going to select Zach Wheeler against the Braves. Obviously the Braves could kick his ass because they're the Braves.
Yep.
But I think like Wheeler is going to throw six innings probably.
Yeah. That seems likely. Unless, you know, Jeff Hoffman has something to say about it. I'm going to take Luis Castillo here just because I didn't take him last year and I regretted it. So even though I don't think the Red Sox lineup is bad, I am still going to take Luis Castillo, especially after the incredible, Rock. I don't know if you saw the latest Mariners digital shorts. The Rock one that was released yesterday is absolutely amazing. If you have not seen it yet, I hope you do.
I am going to take Freddy Peralta for the Brewers in New York against the Mets. It's going to be cold and a little drizzly here. I don't think the ball's going to carry. I don't know if JD Martinez knows this, but it's not a great place to hit in. And Peralta's like maybe he has ascended to like the most underrated pitcher in baseball ?
Sure.
Like, and
he's up there,
a vital piece if the Brewers are going to be anything this year.
Yep. I am going to go with Cole Reagans with my next selection, mostly because I mean, listen, you know, not that Minnesota doesn't have some good right-handed hitters, but they also have a lot of good left-hand hitters, which I don't think they're going to be looking forward to facing Cole Reagans, especially in Kansas City. I like that matchup, so I'll take Mr. Reagans.
I'm going to take Logan Webb in San Diego against the Padres, which for a contact merchant, maybe not. That place is going to be hopping on opening day in San Diego. However, like Zach Wheeler, Logan Webb is going to throw a lot. He's going to throw innings.
Throw many innings. Yes, he will. Okay, I am going to go with Glasnow next. Even though it isn't always pretty, he's still really good. And I don't see a world where he gets like blasted under almost any circumstances. So I'm going to take Glasnow here.
And now that the Dodgers are better.
Yeah.
It's the Cardinals. Now that the Dodgers are able to communicate better with Ohtani because Ipe's gone, I mean, that's going to be huge for Glasnow.
That's at least an extra, you know, probably three or four runs. Just you could tack that onto the offense. So it's a good point.
Yeah, no
doubt. He'll get that run support. He'll be able to pitch more comfortably.
All right. This is where things get interesting. Nah, not quite yet. I'm going to take Mitch Keller in Miami against the Marlins. Mm-hmm. The Marlins offense is not good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not explosive. Even if it's bumping in the loan, in the deep pot, I think Keller can keep the run total down.
Okay. Man. All right. This is getting interesting here. We still have some not so great offenses on the board to potentially go against.
Yeah.
But are the pitchers the ones we really want to go with here? I'm going to go with, I'm going to take Zach Eflin. I still don't know what to make of the Blue Jays, but I think Eflin at home, Eflin was like incredible last season. And I just think that the Blue Jays, it's still a ton of way too many right-handed hitters on that team. So while I am still cautiously optimistic about Toronto this year, not tomorrow. Give me Zach Eflin.
Okay. I'm going to take Jose Quintana.
I was close to taking him. I was getting I'm there. Gonna, yeah, the Brewers lineup, which has been ravaged with injuries. It's very young. As we know, as we just discussed, Citi Field is not very hitter friendly. Sorry, JD Martinez. So Jose Quintana. Now here's the risk of taking Jose Quintana, right? If he's getting blasted, you're going to have to kind of wear that in the early going of this.
I have to come back from that.
You have to come back from that.
This is actually a good pick.
You also have Peralta, though.
I was going to say, I have Peralta and Quintana, which is like, they'll both be done by the time any other games start. So at least I get to follow along.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I do not know. Okay. I am going to go with, this is interesting. So who would you say is the best pitcher? I think the best pitcher left on the board, I think I'm just going to do that, is to me, it's Fromber. I'm going to take Fromber here, even against the Yankees. Maybe it's a bad idea, but I think he's the best pitcher left on the board, so I'm going to take him.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I am going to take, like, the Cubs-Rangers matchup is just like an absolute Pandora's box of runs.
Yes.
Like, that is a horrifying one. I don't want to touch that yet. I'm going to take Brian Bayo.
Okay. Yeah.
In Seattle against the Mariners, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's, again, it would be very Mariners to score 9 runs a game in spring training and then go home and score 0 for the first weekend. So yeah. I think that is totally reasonable. I'm going to go with Berríos here with my next pick, just because I'm also still a little bit unsure what the Rays offense is going to look like. I don't feel great about it, but in Tampa Bay, still pitcher friendly. So I'm going to go Berríos here.
I'm going to go Alex Wood. Okay,
against Cleveland. All right. Yeah.
So this is kind of a nuts pick to take if you're if you're a normie, if you're a casual. But I think Alex Wood against the Guardians.
Mm-hmm.
Will Jose Ramirez hit 3 home runs? Maybe. But I think
on the table.
But as a lefty, like, the other guy on the team who can hit a home run is Josh Naylor, right?
And Bo Naylor, both lefties.
And Bo Naylor. And so it's like, if you throw your left hand, like, you got a decent shot, just walk Ramirez and you're good. So I'm going to take Alex Wood. I'm fascinated to see what the environment's going to be at the Coliseum on opening day.
Yes. Very good point. All right. So I think I'm going to go Darvish next. I don't feel great about it, but
against who?
Against the Giants. I'm going to bank on the rust of the first start. Is we've already kind of gotten through that, and we're a little bit sharper in start two.
All right. So here's what's still on the board, dear listeners. Patrick Sandoval against the Orioles offense. Both of the people tasked with pitching in Cincinnati, where the ball zooms away. JoJo Gray against the Reds and Frankie Montas against the Nats. Miles Michaelis, who was the pitch in Dodger Stadium. Garrett Crochet, who was a reliever 6 minutes ago against the Tigers. Nestor Cortez in Houston against the Astros. Both of the pitchers in the Rangers-Cubs matchup, Justin Steele and Nady Evaldi. And then Kyle Freeland in Arizona against the Diamondbacks. I think this is probably where the quality level drops off.
Well, but and certainly the risk tolerance.
The risk is high. I'm going to take Nady Evaldi here.
Oh, that was my next pick.
Okay.
That was my next pick.
I think against the Cubs offense is good. I like the Cubs. Mm-hmm. But Evaldi at like, he is probably just like the best pitcher left mm-hmm. on the board. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Cubs offense is not overwhelming enough for me not to pick them. I actually think you could have argued that he should have been taken before Alex Wood.
I think I would definitely argue that. But I probably passed on Nate. He's another guy that, like, he is going to pitch deep into the game probably no matter what. Like, you think Bochy's hustling to pull his starter in the first game of the season? Absolutely not. So I think that is a totally reasonable one. I am going to go with Josiah Gray here. I just checked the weather for Thursday's game, and it will be nice, but it will be a little chilly. And with the injuries to the Reds, the fact that they're not going to have Friedel, they're not going to have McLain, I think that between him and Montas, it's close. Again, it's not like the Nationals lineup scares me, and I might end up taking Montas too. But I'm gonna take Josiah here.
I think this is a wild pick, with all due respect to JoJo. Mm-hmm. But drafting the guy who allowed 38 home runs 2 years ago on opening day in the homer
in Cincinnati, I know Cincinnati weirdly didn't actually hit very many home runs last year. So we'll see. Maybe it's a show of support for someone we're a big fan of. Yeah. But I'm gonna go with Josiah here.
I'm just gonna take Justin Steele, who we probably slighted.
Yeah,
by saying that he was not the best pitcher on the board left. He's gonna be in Texas against the Rangers. That place is going to be hopping. They're going to do all the World Series stuff.
And Wyatt Langford will be playing. I guess Corey Seager won't, but, you know, or maybe he will, actually. I'm not sure what the Seager status is. Okay, so we have six pitchers remaining on the board. It is Sandoval against the Orioles, Montas against the Nationals, Michaelis against the Dodgers, Freeland against the Diamondbacks, Cortez against the Astros, and Garrett Crochet against the Tigers. I'm going to take Frankie Montas here with my next pick. I did last year. I believe I had both of the pitchers that started opening day. It was Keller and Green, and it was fine, but not great. But this one, again, Nationals offense could be no bueno. So I will take Frankie Montas here.
I will opt out of the rest of the draft. Thank you, Jordan, so much for participating. Now I'm going to take Patrick Sandoval.
Okay.
Against the Baltimore Orioles because. Yeah. It's a big park.
Again, this is the same. I think I took Bieber last year against the Mariners. I was like, listen, my team's getting their ass whooped. At least I'll get some benefit in this silly podcast draft.
Sandoval, left-handed pitcher against righties in Camden Yards, especially with that wall all the way back there.
Yeah. Okay, so... Now, again, the matchups here. Now, offense-wise, like the Tigers, the offenses we have remaining against our pitchers are Tigers, Astros, Diamondbacks, and Dodgers. But Garrett Crochet is by far the most stunning opening day starter. Now, the benefit of Crochet is that, like, it might actually be good. Like, he could just throw, like, two scoreless and then just be done, right? Like, because he can't go any farther. And maybe that's not a bad pick. Oh man, I think I'm gonna do it because I'm rooting for Garrett Crochet. So I want Crochet on my squad. No offense, Tigers, but we're doing it. Garrett Crochet, you are on the board and the not last pick.
So this is my last actual pick because I will just scoop up whoever you don't want with my final picks. This is my last opportunity to express free will, and I will take Miles Michaelis against the Dodgers. Miles Michaelis with an opportunity to prove his statement.
Yeah.
Okay. Remember,
Midwestern farmers, baby.
The Cards are just a Midwestern farmer. Bunch of Midwestern farmers going up against checkbook baseball. And that's what I'm going to pick.
Oh, boy. All right. So Nestor Cortez Jr. against the Astros in Houston or Kyle Freeland against the Diamondbacks. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to go with Nestor.
No, that's a pick. That's a pick.
I'm taking him. Because you know what? There's always a chance with him that he can just be so funky that they're like, what the heck is going on? I know they've faced him plenty. But I am just going to count on Nestor just being a little bit too weird for the Astros on opening day. And he will be my final selection.
Let's review the teams.
Read me your 15.
Mm-hmm. I got Pablo Lopez against the Royals, Corbin Burns against the Angels, Lizardo at home against Pittsburgh, Wheeler against the Atlanta Braves, Peralta in Citi Field for the Brewers, Logan Webb against the Padres, Keller against the Marlins, Quintana against the Brewers, Brian Bello against the Mariners, Alex Wood for the A's against the Cleveland Guardians, Nathan Eovaldi against the Cubs. The other pitcher in that game, Justin Steele against the Rangers, Patrick Sandoval against the Orioles, Miles Michaelis, the Midwestern Farmer against the Dodgers, and Kyle Freeland against the Diamondbacks.
I am going to battle with Tarek Skubal in Chicago against the White Sox, Bieber against the A's, Spencer Strider against the Phillies, Zach Gallen at home against Colorado, Luis Castillo against Boston, Cole Reagans against Minnesota, Tyler Glasnow against St. Louis, Zach Eflin against Toronto, Framber Valdez against the Yankees, Jose Berrios against the Rays, Yu Darvish against the Giants, Josiah Gray in Cincinnati, Frankie Montas in Cincinnati against the Nationals, Garrett Crochet, my goodness, the opening day starter against the Tigers, and finally, Nestor Cortez. We will be tracking our ERA all Thursday long. We'll have a graphic. We'll see how many times we actually update it during the day, but at the very least, you will hear the results on Friday's episode of Baseball Barbacast. That was a delight. Let us know who we overdrafted, underdrafted, massively disrespected. I'm sure we pissed some people off during this segment. Okay, Jake, before we say goodbye on this final off-season / preseason edition of Baseball Barbacast, let's give our award picks that we feel so strongly about. Now, I will point out, you know, we have officially up on Yahoo our official division winners and picks for awards, as well as some other, you know, superlatives already available. You can see them on Yahoo. Are we going to be 100% consistent with what we put up on the website and what we say right now? Maybe, maybe not. But let's fly through them, Jake. Most valuable player in the American League. What do we think?
You're the most valuable person, and that's what's really more important.
Oh. Thanks, man.
I'm going to go with Aaron Judge because, I mean, watch him.
Yeah. The Judge-Soto dynamic will be fascinating. Of course, you can apply that in the National League, too, with all of those guys. I picked Bobby Witt Jr. just because I just think he's going to keep getting this much better. I mean, him and Julio are in the same bucket. So I'll just go with Bobby Witt Jr. But I think I am leaning more Soto over Judge if I have to pick a Yankee, so I will say that.
Okay.
But I'll stick with Bobby Witt Jr. because he's amazing.
NL MVP. I put down Spencer Strider. I am going with the pitcher winning the MVP award. Mm-hmm. A lot has to happen for this. Like Mookie probably has to get hurt.
You need some injuries, or like it's way more of a bet against the hitting field, which is wild considering who's in the hitting field. but if it's obviously a strong vote of confidence,
Spencer Strider is going to be generational.
I think the bigger problem is not just like that could totally be true, but it's also who's on Spencer Strider's own team. Like, if Acuña does anything close to what he did again, like, it's still impossible to argue Strider is their most important player. So.
Not if his ERA is like 2.2 and he's
-8. I went with Freddie Freeman again. Like, sorting through the Dodgers is tough. Like, Freddie's just so automatic. It is just I am so impressed with him. But there's just no wrong answer if you're picking a Dodger. So I'll stick with Freddie there. Cy Young is more fun. You can go in way more. I guess not if you're sticking with Strider, but American League Cy Young, you can go in a lot of different directions, I think. I went with Luis Castillo. Cole Reagans is a fun pick. I mentioned Tarek Skubal is a fun pick. You put Cole Reagans in here for the graphic. It seems like you're already doubting it. Corbin Burns is in the American League now, so that's cool for him. You want to roll with Reagans or you want to pick someone else?
Can I abstain from this one? Can I just say no vote?
You're big into abstinence, it seems like.
Abstinence is important.
Big abstinence guy.
Big abstinence guy. Big teetotaler.
Sure.
I'll take Cole Reagans.
Okay. Rookie of the year. Now, this is fun because, again, you've gone to Wyatt Langford.
Oh, wait. Jordan. And NL Cy Young, we both took Strider because we're human beings.
Yes. Rookie of the year. The Wyatt Langford versus Evan Carter thing will be interesting.
all season long. I'm going Lankford over Carter. In the American League, again, like, I think my thing with Jackson Holliday is I just see him as just being an amazing baseball player more than his stats are going to be blowing you away, particularly in his first season. And so that's where I think I would lean more towards the Texas guys, because also, like, Holliday doesn't really run, right?
Well, like, I mean, they're just going to play more. Like, they also have more runway, right? So,
yeah, in theory. But even if Holliday plays 5 months, you know, he's going to be in the mix, I imagine. But I just think the head start for Lankford and Carter is going to be substantial. But hey, maybe we get like Cole Keith or something. You know, he'll be there on opening day. Maybe he hits 30 home runs. Who knows? But Lankford is an easy pick there. National League is, I think, way more interesting, because not only do you have the super duper top prospects in Jackson Merrill, Jackson Churio at the very top, but then you also have to factor in the rookie eligible, you know, international signees like Yamamoto, and Jung-Hoo Lee. Not to mention like someone like Paul Skeens, who maybe comes up and makes, you know, 25 starts. So I'm rolling with Churio here. I think like Yamamoto was such an obvious pick when he signed. And now people are, if you want to jump ship, that's fine. It might end up looking stupid, and he just ends up being a top 10 pitcher in baseball, and he's like obviously the rookie of the year. But I'm going to roll with Churio here.
I took Jung-Hoo Lee.
At least one where, statistically, I'm curious what the ceiling is for him in his first season. But I'm so excited to watch him.
Like, if he pops 18 homers and steals like 45 bags and gets the average close to 300.
Would be incredible.
I said if
18 homers would be incredible if he does that in his first season. That would be like, oh my gosh. But that's kind of what they're paying him for. Now, I will say, Jake, on our doc here, we have Manager of the Year as an award that we are supposed to predict. I can't even begin to not just say how little I care, but like how impossible it is to project this. Again, it is who is going to outperform. So who's that? Who's that, Jake?
I'll take Craig Counsell.
Craig Counsell. Wow, that's actually an interesting one, right? Because Counsell's obviously won before.
I don't think he has won before.
Oh, he has to have won at least once.
No, he's never won before. That's like the whole thing. He's never won.
He's never won. Really? Okay, well then, great. That's even further emphasis on how silly this award is. But I think too, right? Like if the Cubs, like, their stats are like only okay, but like they win 93 games because Craig Counsell. Yeah, I guess he probably will win then. Jed's like, I'm a genius. Look at me. This is why you pay your manager $8 million a year. but I mean, other than that, like, I guess I would just look at like the AL Central, really. It's like, if the Royals win 20 more games than they did last year or whatever, it'd be interesting if like anybody wants to vote for Hinch, right? Like if the Tigers sneak into the playoffs, like how does that work? I would be very curious about that one, but I'm not giving an official Manager of the Year pick. I can't do it. I'm sorry.
Abstinence.
Abstinence. Any other ones? Again, we have a couple other picks that you can see on Yahoo, but again, you can tell how not strongly we feel about, if we did this again in 6 hours, I would give you entirely different names. So
Jordan, that's it. I don't really want to talk about anything else.
We made it. Thank you, everyone, for joining us all throughout the offseason.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, a lot changed. We found a new home here at Yahoo. It has been fantastic. We are so grateful for everyone internally at Yahoo who has supported this podcast in the lead up to this season. We are so excited to just have so much ready to go and just like kind of be in the flow of things. There was a time early in this offseason when we were worried we were going to have to make this transition like around now. And so we're very glad that we were able to make this happen well in advance of opening day to kind of get our footing here at Yahoo. It's been really great. So shouts out to Brett Rader, of course, overseeing podcasts at Yahoo. Shouts out to producer Andrew Hartz. We're so excited to get this season started. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. We will, of course, be reporting from our respective opening days on Thursday. And we'll be back on Friday to recap what we saw with our own two eyes. We'll be watching real baseball that actually means something tomorrow. We hope everybody enjoys their opening day. Thank you for listening, watching. We'll talk to you soon. Goodbye.